Welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa Caprio. Do you believe in magic? What if you were told that all you had to do was get a little creative and work a magic spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Here on Postcards to the Universe, we will share manifesting, tips, postcards, creativity, abundance, and prosperity. Here is your host, Melissa Caprio.
Welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave. How's everybody doing? I hope you are doing well. For those who celebrate Easter, I hope you had a really nice Easter this year. We had a very low-key Easter. It was the first one without my sister. So, you know, the first year of the holidays, it's not always easy, but we were together, and so it was okay. I have a really cool show today, and this is a really interesting subject matter that I am very fascinated with, and I hope that you will be too. My guest is author Nicole Kerr, and we're going to be sharing about her personal experience and her book, You Are Deathless, A Near-Death Experience, and she's going to join me in just a few minutes. For those of you who listen to my show each week, thank you again for being with me today. I love that you keep coming back, and I love all your messages that I get about how much you enjoy my show. It really means a lot to me, so thank you so much. For those of you who have just found me for the first time, I just want to say welcome. Thank you so much for being here with me. I hope you keep coming back. Just a little bit about me. I am an artist, and I'm a photographer and an author, and I also have a book, and it's titled Postcards to the Universe, Harness the Universe's Power and Manifest Your Dreams. And in the book, there are 30 manifesting stories along with the photographs that I took of the contributors manifesting postcards. And you may be asking, well, what is a manifesting postcard? And it's like a mini vision board. I have people create a postcard to bring in what they want in their life, and I photograph them. So in the book, there are 30 photos with their stories. I took all the photos, and I include writing exercises, and it helps us get clear in what it is we want to manifest, because we're not always quite sure what it is we want. We just know there's a certain feeling we want. We don't want to feel a certain way anymore. We want to feel more abundant in certain areas of our life. So the writing exercises are there to help us get real clear about that. And there's also a toolbox full of fun exercises on how to manifest in love and money and health and career. And I have that at the end of each section. So it was really fun doing the book. So if you're interested, which I hope you are, you can get the book at your favorite bookstore online, and you can read people's incredible journeys of manifesting and transformation. So I hope that you do. I'm also asking, and I keep asking, and I will keep asking each week for people to send me a manifesting postcard. I talk about how to create one and where to send it on my website, postcardstotheuniverse.com. And if you have any questions, please just reach out to me and I will help you. But all the information is on the website. And if you happen to be one of the people that do like Facebook, I do have a group. It's called Postcards of Love. It's public. And I like to share funny, uplifting posts. And you can share there too. So I could see you over there. So each week I do a postcard, and I call it a magical message, and I post it across my social media, and it's an image of a manifesting postcard with an affirmation related to it. I like to focus on affirmations. I think affirmations are super powerful for them to become a new belief in our lives. And this week, magical message is, I am blessed to have you. So, you know, this, it's pretty obvious that I am blessed to have you. So I think that we should look around in our lives and see the people that contribute to our lives in positive ways. Maybe even the people who have contributed in our lives in negative ways, right? Because we've learned from those experiences. So just take that into consideration. If you're feeling overly stressed or down or depressed, you probably have so many people in your life that love you and will support you and want to be there for you. So just take a look at those that you love and feel grateful for them in your life. And the experiences with people who have maybe betrayed you, hurt you, let you down, also be grateful for those experiences if you can, because it has helped you grow in so many ways and it has really shifted who you are and you've learned so much from those experiences, right? So just think about that. So that was my thought for this week, that I am blessed to have you, and I am blessed to have you be here with me each week. Okay, so next week I have Greg Whiting. He helps leaders and entrepreneurs heal anxiety, depression, chronic pain, and trauma so they can lead with bold and courageous hearts. For 2 decades, he's helped clients reduce or eliminate their dependence on antidepressants, anxiety, pain, and sleep medications. And he addresses the unique causative factors at play beneath our pain, namely the unresolved trauma that causes inflammation, compromised immune systems. So we're going to talk all about that next week, so you can join me to listen to Greg. But today, to get to my guest, who's had an incredible experience, and we're going to talk to her. I've just finished her book this afternoon. It's really, really interesting, and boy, has she gone through some stuff. So Nicole Kerr was a 19-year-old cadet at the United States Air Force Academy and was forced to learn how to live differently following a terrifying and transformative near-death experience. Her memory of the experience came back 20 years later, and it has taken Nicole another 2 decades to align her soul, mind, and body, proving healing is certainly a non-linear process. In her book, You Are Deathless, A Near-Death Experience Taught Me How to Fully Live and Not Fear Death, Kerr shares her journey about awakening to herself and her personal transformational work. Through her own death, she was forced to shed ascribed identities. Kerr learned to develop an authentic, loving relationship with herself and God. She describes why people shouldn't fear death and how to live life to the fullest. Readers are inspired by Nicole's own death experience and the lessons she's learned. She has seen what awaits at the end of this life. A good death begins today, and with it, a great life. A disabled veteran, Nicole, found out more about her. If you go to her website, www.nicolekerr.com. Welcome, Nicole. Thank you so much for being here with me today. You know what, though? It's okay, because it's happened before. And anytime somebody messes up my name, it's always Michelle. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, it's always like Michelle that somebody calls me. But that's okay. It's Melissa. No worries at all. Okay. You go into great depth about your growing up with your very religious and very strict household with your parents before the accident, and the accident, which is called cause. Can you share a little bit about your background growing up in that household, and then, you know, to the accident?
Absolutely. Well, I grew up in the South, the Deep South, Jackson, Mississippi, and, you know, it's part of the Bible, Southern Baptist. My mother was Lutheran. I went to parochial schools. I went to Episcopalian for 3 years, then Southern Baptist for another 4 years, and then we went to public schools and then wound up in a preparatory school. So paradoxes and contradictions. But I will tell you, when you actually cross over to the other side, which we're all going to do, there are no contradictions. It's only love. And I think that is my biggest lesson. Is the Lutherans drank wine. They baptized each other differently. And there's just, you know, there's differences. And it was confusing to me as a kid growing up. So I can only imagine it was confusing to God. But it was, we did Bible, we quit, and then went into a family business. So we all worked in the family business, which was lawnmowers. And we did that from, you know, all the way until we graduated from high school. So summers were spent. She came in from the Ukraine and was an indentured servant in Holly Springs, Mississippi. And so, you know, they both had traumas of their own. And what I have learned with trauma, going through my own and their own trauma, they have no compassion for you with your trauma. And so, you know, I will tell you that that has probably been one of the hardest parts for me, is the unresolved trauma and trying to get help to heal that. But once I went through school in Mississippi, I am a recovering people pleaser. And mainly my dad, and I think we learned that in the South as well, and also to stuff our emotions. You're not allowed to get angry, especially at your parents, or hurt your mother. You know, those are all no-nos. And so you stuff those emotions, but they go somewhere, right? So they're going to different organs in your body, and you're just pushing them down. And at some point in your life, they're going to have to come up. And that's where I had that 20-year gap between when my memory came back and actually processing everything, because it was such a massive trauma and went against what my experience was on the other side, was a whole different concept of God. So I was at the academy. I was one of the first women at the academy. The first class graduated with women in 80, and mine was 86. So you can see there was still resentment for women being allowed to be in the military academies, and they're abusive. I don't care what anybody says, especially your first year. There is physical abuse, there's emotional abuse, there's mental abuse, and there's spirit, and there's sexual abuse, especially with the women. And that happened to me, and I was not. How do I say this? I went because of my dad. He wanted one of his siblings to go, and I wanted to please him. So I stepped up for the assignment and said, "Yes, sir." I went through an arduous process to get accepted. You have to get a congressional nomination, et cetera. I got all of that. I got in there, and after 3 weeks, I knew my soul was in the wrong place. I knew it. I knew it before then, but it really hit me when we got to make a phone call home, because there was no cell phones back in 1982 and three.
Right.
And we got 3 minutes, and I heard my mother's voice, and I just broke down in tears. And I just was like hyperventilating the entire 3 minutes. I couldn't say a word, not one word. And then my commander took the phone, clicked it, and told me to get over there and get myself together. And I look back on it now, and it was, Melissa, it was my first panic attack. I didn't know that, but that is what it was. And what I needed from my parents was permission to quit. I had a fear of failure, and I did all this work to get here. I didn't feel I could just quit without feeling so much shame and less than, not good enough, and embarrassed and humiliated. And I needed someone there's permission to quit and say, it's okay. It's okay that this place is not for you. You know, let's get you out of here. Let's get you out of this abusive situation and find out, you know, what does resonate with you. And they wouldn't do it. In fact, my mom told me, a while after, you know, Nicole, I asked your father, you know, what have we done to her? And he said, oh, she's going to be fine. And right. Melissa, I was not fine. I actually went on to ARP Light, which is remedial training. I mean, I did nothing during high school to prepare myself for the academy. I was a model. I was on a team board. I did, you know, drill team where you kick your legs up like the Rockettes. You know, I was doing stuff like that. I wasn't doing ROTC or anything that would lend myself to, you know, going through a combat course, an obstacle course, and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it really was, my soul was on the wrong track, and I was getting deeper and deeper into it the longer I was staying. So my sophomore year, we were at a squadron function, and the cadets were drinking, and I was one of the last to leave and asked a guy, a senior, for a ride home. And my dad's rules, okay, get this, I never went on a date, never. And his rules were no smoking, no drinking, and no dating upperclassmen. Okay, now I'm at a school with 4,000 guys, and you're telling me not to date anybody, you're telling me to not drink, and you're telling me to not smoke a cigarette. That's what you go to college for, is to start experiencing freedom right. and rebellion. If you
and everybody smoked in the 80s, right? Everybody smoked back then. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, here is the one time I had some fun. He wanted to stop at a bar for another beer. And then, you know, the next thing I know, he wants to go make out, in front of the Rocky Mountains at the sunset. And I'm like, oh no, this is not what I thought. I just needed a ride back to the academy. And so the next thing I know, he's getting back on the road because we had to be back at a certain time or else we'd be in big trouble. And that's the last thing I remember, is he got on the road, and then I woke up in the ICU at Penrose Community Hospital. And the only memory I had were bright white lights. And that stuck with me for over 19 years until I was working at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, and was going to work, my usual routine. And I will tell you, my parents had told the doctor when they discharged me, I was in the hospital 4 months. I was pronounced dead at the scene. Okay, yeah. bystanders had tried to get some kind of vitals on me and couldn't. So they went in and got a blanket and covered me up. And the first responders got there about 10 to 15 minutes, somewhere around there later. So I was actually clinically dead that time. And the EMT later told me that when he got there, he couldn't get any vitals either. So the only thing that he knew to do was a sternal knuckle press, which elicits pain in the body. And my right eye flickered and my pupil dilated. So he knew there was life in me, and he was just scared that he wasn't going to be able to keep me alive. And so we've heard that saying, the eyes are the window to the soul, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
At that moment, my soul came back in through my eye. It had left when I went through the windshield and went straight up. My energy body cracked, my soul left me, and my body fell to the ground. So I did not experience falling down on the earth, because I knew when I did, I was going to die. So he told me that, you know, I was like, they did CPR all the way to the hospital. I had so many injuries between an amputated foot and a broken pelvis and lacerations and a severed wrist. And I mean, the only thing that was not injured really was my spinal cord and my brain, although it did get banged up. And so, they managed to stabilize me that night, and then it was a roller coaster journey for 4 months on life and death. And every day it really was, am I going to live or am I going to die? 7 weeks in ICU, 6 operations, 2 code blues. You know, it was intense, to say the least. And
yeah, to say the least. Yeah, you go into great detail in the book about the extensiveness of your injuries, and they're very extensive. And she also shows a picture of the car, which is amazing that you did survive that, because it looks, oh my God. Yeah, it was very, very extensive. So the trauma of that, I can imagine why your brain would completely shut that down until so many years later, when you started having flashes. Your memory, right, started coming, and it was, because it wanted to come to the surface. So yeah, so you talk about that. So like, we can fast forward a little to 19 years later. So you're going through the 4 months, and then it's not just the 4 months in the hospital. It's many months of rehab, many months of recovery, of you getting yourself back together. So now 19 years later, you're working, and then what started happening? You started getting these flashes of this experience?
Well, it all came really, the chunk of it came in 2 days, and I went directly to my body worker, my chiropractor, instead of work, and he said, Nicole, these are repressed memories. And I said, why are they coming up now, you know, 2 decades afterwards? And he said, because your body is ready for them. And there's a beautiful book out called The Body Keeps the Score by Dr. Bessel van der Kolk that talks about trauma and how your body holds on to that trauma. And when you're ready, it will actually release it. And so I did not have any support when I came back. I was so injured, I basically went back to an infantile state. So my mother had to take care of me. I couldn't go to the bathroom. I couldn't walk on my own. Yeah. I mean, I was starting at square one again when all my peers were out having a good time, going to college, doing all this great stuff. So that was traumatic. And also, I had lost my faith in the concept of the God that I had grown up with. But my parents had not, and they thought I was this miracle, which I am, but not in the way that they saw it, you know, and they blamed me. And so I'm like, what am I going to do with parents in a family that blames me and never is going to forgive me for doing this? I didn't feel loved. And now I've got a physical body that I'm not sure what limitations I'm going to have. I mean, why keep living? Everything was so grim for me in terms of life, and I didn't feel like God listened to me at all. None of my prayers seemed to be answered. You know, it was just, there was no evidence showing up. And so I thought of God as a vending machine. If you did what you were told and you were a good person, you got the reward. And that was not happening. So
talk about God, that you learn that God is a punishing God. And a lot of segregated religions say that, you know, you feel shame for making mistakes. I mean, I never could understand a God like that. And just to let everybody know, she wasn't driving. The guy was driving. And your dad, you talk about this, especially your dad blamed you for it. Your parents blamed you for it, which I thought was really, really sad. I mean, just reading that, I just felt for you, because I'm like, oh my God, her body is so broken and she's so broken. And then, you know, your mom, I know, you know, is taking care of you. Did you feel like it was almost out of obligation? Like she's supposed to, because she was your mom, but then they're blaming you for the accident, which is horrible.
And then when, this past May, when I talked to my roommate and found out I had not talked to her in 38 years. She quit the academy and left. She left at Christmas and never came back. And I found her on Facebook and we Zoomed, Melissa. And the first thing she said to me is, I'm so sorry for causing the wreck. I said, what in the world are you talking about? And she said, we had agreed that we were going to ride back together. You, when the event was over, you had come over and said, okay, you know, I'm ready to go with you. And I said, no, I was going to. There was a senior cadet there who was drunk, almost all of them were, and she really liked him. She wanted to be alone with him, so she was going to drive his car back. And she told me, no, go over there. There's one guy left. Get a ride with him. And I said, but he's been drinking. I don't feel comfortable. She said, Nicole, I'll go have some fun. You know, I'll see you back at the academy. And she never saw me back at the academy. So she has been haunted by this for 40 years. She quit because of it. She couldn't face it. And she said, you know, our lives would have been so different if I would have just said, yes, get in the car. I'll take you back. But I didn't.
Wow. That's amazing that she carried that. Okay. I just looked at the time. We're at the halftime mark. So let's take our break here. And then we're going to talk about when you remembered the near-death experience. Okay, guys, stay tuned. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. OM Times.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hi, I'm Melissa Caprio from Postcards to the Universe, creating the life you crave. Do you believe in magic? What if I told you all you had to do was get a little creative and work a dream spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Well, guess what? I've got the spell for you. Postcards to the Universe, a global movement for manifestation, is a casting magical tool for you to use whenever you want. How does living in passion sound to you? Join me in my movement where you get to create in the magical playground. Let's think outside the box and do some playful conjuring. By casting out our desires with a manifesting postcard, we explore our hearts and allow the alchemy of our dreams to appear. And don't forget to tune in each week here on Om Times Radio with my show, Postcards to the Universe, Creating the Life You Crave at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. I share tips on creativity, abundance, and prosperity, and you will be introduced to the coolest guests, trailblazers, mystics, and creatives who enrich our lives.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio.
Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community. The rainbow is God's promise of hope for you and me. And though the clouds hang heavy and the sun we cannot see, we know above the dark clouds that fill the stormy sky, hope's rainbow will come shining through when the clouds have drifted by. Teresa Caprio is the president and founder of Rainbow Guardian, Inc., a nonprofit 501c3 serving the intellectually challenged / developmentally disabled, including autism. Teresa started the foundation in 1995 so she could help make a better life for her intellectually challenged daughter. Her dream is that the Rainbow Guardian will provide the necessary tools and education to help the public understand the special needs population, because it's often discarded in mainstream society. To find out more or make a donation in support, please go to www.rainbowguardian.org. Rainbow Guardian's special mission is to see these unique people live a happy, full life and have a future of liberty and equality.
Welcome back. So if you're just joining me today, I have author Nicole Kerr as my guest, and we're talking about her near-death experience and her new book called You Are Deathless. So Nicole, okay, so I want to jump right in about, so you 19 years later, in 2 days, all of a sudden you have all these memories that come rushing back about the physical events that happen, you being in the car, you going around a curve, you flying out of the car and all that. And you said in the book that you didn't feel, is that when you had the memory of leaving your body? Because you said that you didn't feel any pain at all, and that when we die, we don't feel pain, like we jump out of our body. And you're not the first person I've heard that from. I've heard this before with other people. Talking about that.
Yeah, that is correct. So we have an energy body, and that splits open when we die, and your soul flies out of it. Okay. So that breath that we take that keeps us alive, that is energy that moves out of your body, and you're left with a corpse. So I when I was in the air, I called it Casper the Ghost because I didn't know who it was. And
right.
It had a male, I could describe like it was male, it was in his 30s and all this, but It didn't come to me until after the book was published that it was my grandfather that came in an angelic form and he was in his early 30s. And I was like, oh my gosh, because he died at age 58 and he came to me around his death in August and told me when I was 58 that it was him. So I felt like,
wow.
Oh my gosh. It's not Casper. It's my grandfather, but it was, it was amazing. It was amazing because nothing bad about him that I had been told showed up with him. That was all, it was only love. And he was there to take me up to this space. And it was my soul because I could look down and see my corpse. I was in a ditch. I could see what I was wearing and I was in this soul form and I could hear other spirits and angels. Now we weren't talking English. I don't know what we were, how we were communicating, if it was telepathically or whatever. But one of the conversations I overheard were two angels talking about that we, meaning us humans here on earth, need to ask the angelic realm for help. Because we have free will in our society, they are not going to interfere unless we specifically ask, unless it's a life or death situation. And I actually do remember calling out, oh my God, help me. But then I knew I was going to hit the ground and die. I just knew it. And I did. And so that's one of the things to know that every single one of us has at least one guardian angel and to form a relationship with that angel. And there's so many other angels out there that are ready to help us. We are not alone. And to develop that is so freeing at in so many levels. And then the other message I got was my grandfather told me that I was going to go back. And I was like, oh, no. I do not want to go back.
You didn't want to go back. You didn't,
no,
right?
I was very clear because I saw that body and I knew there was going to be pain and suffering in terms of rehabbing physically, but not knowing what I would limitations on my body or not. I didn't want to go back to a family that believed in a God that had, if you were bad, you went to hell, you know, and then I didn't want to go back into a family where they would blame me for something I didn't do. So why would I want to live, you know? And one of my angels has worked really hard to make sure that I came back from a code blue. I kicked twice, you know, I am here for a reason, and this is my vocation now, is to help people and get this message out to not be afraid of death. Because when you think about almost every book written about death is cloaked in a veil of doom and gloom, and death has a cloud of depression and negativity around it throughout our culture and society. And my own experience, along with hundreds of thousands of others, is 100% different. Death is absolute beauty, light and loving kindness on the other side. And I didn't want to leave that. I felt like an astronaut in outer space. I was so blissed out. There's not even the right words for it, but it's pure love and freedom and liberation. And there's just no pain. There's no suffering. There's no past that you're bringing with you. There's no mistakes because that was a story that you went through on earth. You know, it doesn't transfer over. And so he told me I was going to come back and that my message was to tell people not to be afraid of death. And I'm like, okay, how in the world am I supposed to do that? You know?
So is that why you think this happened to you? Do you think that this was part of your life's journey that you had to have this experience because that's what you were really meant to do?
Yes. And when I did die at 19, the concept of God I believed in, Melissa, was one where if I wasn't a good person, I would go to hell and I'd be separated eternally from my family and from God. And I just was like, I don't want that. But that's not what happened. That's not what happened at all, you know? And yeah. So there is so much that has been, their false belief systems that have been imprinted in so many of us that grew up in a lot of these religions mm-hmm. that saw God as a duality. And what I want to say about that is it's a way to cause fear in people mm-hmm. and to keep them in control. Mm-hmm. And fear is a very low vibration. And if you're in fear, you're going to lose your clarity. And in order to regain your clarity, you got to address your fears. So people have to address their fears about dying, and they need to start doing it now because none of us are guaranteed tomorrow. And we think we can just put this off and off and off. And I tell you, what usually happens is people never deal with the fiscal, with the mm-hmm. clutter clearing, and they never deal with their own concept of God and what they really believe is going to happen. And so families fracture as a result mm-hmm. when someone dies and doesn't have all of this spelled out, and they're very clear and discerning about what they believe and how they want it to happen. So it just causes a lot of tension, frustration, fracturing of families. It really does if you don't take care of this. And it's about responsibility to your spirituality.
Yeah. I have a question. Because you said you saw your body on the crumpled on the ground, and now you knew if you went back, you were going to suffer physical pain, but did you have any, before that thought, did you have any attachment to that body? You know, we're so attached right now to our physical bodies, right? You know, especially, you know, you look in the mirror, you know how attached you are to your physical body.
Oh, and the amount of time and resources and money that people spend on their body and their looks. And, you know, it's about 80% physical and maybe mm-hmm. 20% spiritual, instead of flipping that and starting to look at what do I really believe instead of what was passed on to me generationally. And this is what this time in the world is about, is to actually wake up mm-hmm. your consciousness to figure out what it is that you believe. And for me, I can tell you that God is an energy. There is nowhere mm-hmm. God is not. And God is love, unconditional, pure, simple love. And in my book, I talk about a little six-year-old girl that I saw, and she was scared to death that she was going to hell. She was adopted, and she'd done something wrong. Mm-hmm. And so when I asked her how she sees God, she eagerly told me, she said, you know, Nicole, God is a blue spirit with colors of balloons and all different colors, no head, and can talk. And clearly this little girl is still having a direct experience with God. There's no filters. And that little girl has given me the closest definition or concept to God that I've gleaned so far. And it's beautiful. And, mm-hmm. you know, I also in my book talk about the 10 common lessons from near-death experiencers. And this is coming from research. And the first one is we do not die. Our soul has this long trajectory. This is not our first rodeo, Melissa, and there's going to be other incarnations. Yeah. And it's about what we came in to learn and, you know, what wisdom did you gain in this lifetime? And I think the other thing is I really believe we come here as a journey to learn love. Mm-hmm. And what happens to us happens as our soul's way of stretching us to expand our ability to love. And that's the most important reason why. But, you know, most people are caught up in their identities. They're a people pleaser, a perfectionist, a rebel, whatever it is. And that's defining them. And they're also they have these false belief systems that are operating in them that are sabotaging them. And I learned that as a dietitian when I would tell someone, you've got diabetes, you need to, you know, watch your carbohydrates. And as soon as they got stressed, they got triggered and they'd go eat a pint of Ben and Jerry's and, you know, their blood sugars would just go off the charts. And so, you know, it's really important that you deal with trauma and that you work through it. And there are a lot of ways now. I mean, I have PTSD from this, and it was only diagnosed two years ago.
And sure. How could you not? It was pretty severe. What you, your recovery process was, very traumatic.
Yeah. But Melissa, it took a doctor with the VA just 2 years ago to put that in, and for them to give me that as a diagnosis. Before it was, you know, anxiety and depression.
Sure.
I was on over 41 different drugs they were trying on me. And it's just like, you know, oh my gosh, it was horrible. But, you know, now that I know, now I can get the treatment. But when you're just shooting in the dark at stuff, you know, it's like, it's hurting people. It really is. It's keeping them stuck. And the other piece, the other tool, is to not only work on the emotional aspects that are buried through NET, EMFT, tapping, all of those kind of things, biofeedback, they're out there to help you. You've got to deal with soul loss. And that is something that people are not real aware of. But soul, you can do a soul retrieval, and it's a powerful healing tool. And I talk about it in the book.
Yeah,
and what you're dealing with here is the spiritual and hidden realm. And I'm here to tell you, it's a real thing, because with the trauma of that car crash, my soul, part of my soul left me as a means of self-protection. And it was a big part of me. And, you know, I didn't want to be here. I had a low level consistent feeling that something is missing in my life, which is just this general depression and feeling empty, you know, and third, I couldn't get over it. You know, I just felt stuck with this chronic health condition and hypervigilant about keeping myself safe all the time.
Sure.
And so those are symptoms of soul loss. So, you know, you can, there's shaman that do this, there are hypnotherapists that do this. So there, you know, people are starting to address this piece of the wellness puzzle as well, because to me, this is the most important. You know, yes, you need to eat well and all that kind of stuff, but that's not going to be where the healing comes from inside. And knowing that for me, I was searching for an external version of God, and God is within me and I have the answers within me. I just had to learn to trust myself, because as a result of not getting mental health help after the accident, because my parents told the doctor that, you know, Jesus and God were my psychiatrists.
Right.
I developed an eating disorder, and I was, back then it was called compulsive eating. Today it's binge eating disorder, but I hated myself, you know, and I didn't understand it. And that lasted from 20 to 40 years old when I met my now husband, but it was horrible.
Because that was the only thing you could control, right? Your life was out of control. Everything was out of control. So you could control the way you eat. So that makes total sense to me. So I know you had, the quote in your questions was, did it shift all at once or was it an incremental process? And just from you talking to you, it feels more like an incremental process. It's not like you had like, oh, I'm this way one day, I had the accident, I woke up 20 years later and all of a sudden I'm healed. It just didn't happen that way for you.
No,
right?
No. And that's why I say healing is not linear. Because when you have never addressed emotions, you know, we are a very illiterate nation when it comes to emotions. Yeah. We only know mad, bad, sad, and glad. But when you push down all of this fear, and I was raised from, I think as soon as I came out of the womb, you know, I was a disappointment to my dad, because at 10 and a half pounds, I should have been a linebacker for the Cowboys. And I wasn't, you know, and so I tried to prove to him my entire life, that I'm worthy of his love and his approval. And, you know, you just have to at some point realize it, you just can't change people, and you can't make people, even your parents, love you. They put conditions on it. And to this day, I do not talk to my parents. I wish them the best. They live in Australia, but they are spiritually, they are religious addicts. That is a really tough addiction, because God is always right. Their version of God is always right. You can't argue with it. So, you know.
And it's their version. I like that you said their version of God is always right, right? It's not it's not the version, it's their version. And you talk about in the book about how your relationship with God has changed dramatically since the accident. You want to just touch on that a little?
Oh, absolutely. Letting go of all those earlier belief systems that the church just, was telling you this and all your friends were in the same boat as you, God to me today is, and like I said, it's an energy of like that white light and feeling in a state of alignment and bliss and just being in the flow. You know how things just come easy to you and it's the manifestation. It's like I'm clear now through my alignment, but I had to work through the trauma. I had to work through the physical stuff. I had to work through the emotional stuff and then the mental stuff and the PTSD and get myself in a place where I could align with the higher realms. And it's been an amazing journey now that I can learn to trust them because I see them completely different than the way they were explained to me when I was a kid. And God is love. And I've experienced that type of love. And I think the closest thing you're going to get here is probably a doggy that loves you, just so happy to see you every time that you come in, but people are human as well as spiritual. So they tend to put conditions on love and it's very confusing and it's very disappointing and it's very disillusioning when people do that to you. And we're going through some really tough times in this country where there's a lot of fear and fear is a low vibration. And we've just got to focus on the fact that everyone and everything is connected and to start loving ourselves and others is the most important thing we can do. And that includes to quit judging yourself, not to judge your emotions, not to judge your thoughts and not to judge your behaviors, because that only lowers our vibration and us beating up on ourselves is never going to get us to, our true essence. We're more than our physical body and brain. And that is where we need to start putting our energy and time, not all of it, but start thinking about that because with these mass shootings in America, my gosh, you just never know. I mean, it really is.
I know. It's terrible. I think we're all manifesting trauma collectively. That's why this is all coming up, right? Why is this happening so much now? I think we're manifesting trauma. I think we've all had some trauma because could you even talk about it that we – they've been studies that in mice that trauma is inherited in our DNA, right? So even though personally you may have not gone through what your parents went through, you're still manifesting that the reaction to the trauma because it's inherited. And I thought that was really interesting. And I love this soul retrieval thing. I'm very fascinated. I talked about it once before. Somebody else was talking about it on a show because I do think our souls get fractured. And that's a lot of the reason I believe that sometimes there's certain things that we really have a hard time letting go of, even if we know better. We know better, but we still can't do it because what is it, And I think hopefully that will kind of get more popular, people having these healing experiences with somebody who's like a shaman who really knows this kind of work. So it's so fascinating to me. Did you feel instantly like a healing after that experience?
I cried because it was just what he saw and described to me made such a big difference in why I was running around depressed and just pushing myself every day to just show up for work, but I was exhausted. I didn't have much happiness in my life, much joy. I just felt like it was all I could do to get through the day. And, just like any other wound, that wounded part of the soul should at some point undergo some healing. And that's where, soul retrieval is such a powerful healing tool. And, you know, I will say this, it has, I have done, that's why I put BTDT.
You're reading my mind. You're reading my mind because I'm like, I have to ask her what BTDT stands for. And you just said it. Go ahead.
Okay.
What is it?
So it stands for been there, done that. And I actually, folks, yes, I did put that on the cover of my book as my credential. It's up there with my dietitian and my master's in public health. And people ask me all the time, they go, I've never seen that. What is that? And I said, been there, done that. And they go, can you do that? And I said,
yes, I can.
I did it, you know, because I think experience trumps theory all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
it makes you more compassionate. It makes you more empathetic. It makes you more caring and sympathetic. And I don't want anybody to have a near-death experience to learn what I did. And that's why I wrote the book, is to help people with their fears about death. And you may think you don't have any, but it's unconscious. We all would have some. And support you through the loss of loved ones, because there are a lot of souls on this planet that are choosing to leave right now. And it's really causing a lot of people on this, you know, on a humanity level, suffering, grief, pain, and loss. And it's hard to remember the bigger cosmic context is benevolent and extraordinary, and that if we can enable ourselves to live a happier life, we can prepare for our own graceful passing and support others who are approaching their own transition. And then I wrote it to inspire you and others to live fully, freely with your heart and your hands wide open, because this book, writing it helped heal me. And then doing the audio, having to voice it out loud, my throat chakra had been closed for so long. And when, I mean, it was sore, but my throat has been sore for the last 3 months. And I know this is my truth. And I know my parents aren't going to read it. Because the last thing my dad ever said to me is, if you get the concept of God wrong, Nicole, you're really going to get it. Well, there's the fear again, okay? Wow. Thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
You know, I just wish him well. And, you know, it's the end. It's not how I thought my relationship with my family or parents would look, but it's what I've had to do, because I was brought in not to write this book for my family, but for others. My soul contract changed when I came back, and I've had to go through 40 years, as I say, wandering in the wilderness like the Israelites to get to this point, to get it out there and to be in alignment with what I remember and what I've experienced and what I've studied, and write it in a way that's authentic and true and is me and is my voice. And I think I accomplished that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. No, it's very interesting, the story. So you said the Audible just released yesterday, right? So people.
Yeah.
Congrats. I love Audible. I listen to Audible all the time. So the Audible, and then you can get it on Amazon or your local bookstores. Is it in your local bookstores, Barnes & Noble and those places?
Yep. And if you have an independent, they'll order it for you. So yeah, it's a 7-hour, 6-minute broadcast. But and the images that, because I put pictures in the book, the images are on my website. So if you go to my website and you click on near death, you are deathless, it'll say book images. And then you can see in the chapter, the car, you can see me, you know, in the hospital, you can see me today, the images that you would see if you were actually reading the book. So I've remet my website to do that, so people can get an idea of the image, because that car crash says,
yeah, it says it all. Thank you so much, Nicole. Check her out at NicoleCare.com. It was such a pleasure talking with you today. Thank you so much for being here with me. And thank you guys for listening to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, Creating the Life You Crave. Wishing everyone a wonderful week filled with joy, abundance, and love. Peace.
Thanks, Melissa, and blessings all.
Thank you.